The following podcast contains compromised audio with some distortion. We had the choice of not putting this file up as a podcast, but we felt in spite of the distortion, the program material was still worth listening to. We do apologize for the distortion. As a listener, we thank you for listening in spite of the bad audio. Ladies and gentlemen, our normally scheduled programming will not be heard today, so that we can bring you this special rebroadcast of our live broadcast from the Dayton 2009 Hamvention. This is the QSO broadcast that took place on Saturday. So turn the volume up, settle back, listen, and enjoy as you listen to QSO coming to you live from the Dayton Hamvention 2009. How many of you would like to operate 80 meters, but you can't because of antenna restrictions? Well, that's over. You can operate 80 meters right now. You can operate from your home, your apartment. You can take it on the road with you. It's the brand new Transworld Antennas 8080. Go to their website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. This is a portable antenna, but it can be a permanent antenna. It's stealth. It's not a low-profile antenna. This thing is a performance-driven piece of engineering. You need to see it. It will be at Dayton, and you need to hear one of these on the air. If you want to operate 80 meters and you can't, I love the 80-meter band. I can't imagine not being able to operate on 80. But nonetheless, if you're in that position, don't stay in that position. Go to the website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. Go up there and take a look at their brand new 8080 and look for it at Dayton.
Week after week, you hear us talk about Transworld Antennas, and you hear us talk about the TW2010, the 4040, the Backpacker, and all these different antennas. Of course, the TW2010 Adventurer came first. Folks were amazed at its performance. Then they introduced the Backpacker, and now the 4040. Go to EHAM and read the reviews on the TW2010. Just go to EHAM and read those reviews. Now, you can do that by going to transworldantennas.com. Just go to transworldantennas.com. Transworld Antennas, one word. Go to transworldantennas.com. There's a link on that page that'll take you right straight to the EHAM reviews, or you can just go to EHAM yourself. And if you're a ham, you know how to get to EHAM on the internet. Just Google it. You'll get there. And read the reviews. See what other amateur radio operators are saying about this antenna. Thank you. And now back to our special rebroadcast of the Dayton 2009 Hamvention.
Things that we can do.
I guess what I'm wanting to ask you is this radio that you've got now that's got all these capabilities, the handheld, and Alinco makes a 220 rig,
right?
And I assume they're making single bands. I look at the catalogs and I see these things, but I don't retain everything that
we have three monoband radios, 2 meters, 220, and 440. We have a dual band mobile, the 635, which is 2 meters and 440. And then we have a complement of handhelds in the same bands, standalone 2 meters, standalone 220, standalone 440. Dual band radio, and then the tri-bander. And just since we're talking about Alinco products, probably the best power supply on the market in our little switching supply. It is, I'd put it up against anybody's power supply.
It's funny because my first switching power supply I bought, I took it back.
You won't take an Alinco.
Well, it was stupidity is what it was. I mean, I bought this power supply and I brought it home and I set it down and I looked at it and I picked it up a few times and I said, "Boy, this thing doesn't weigh anything.
It's too light to be a power.
This really doesn't weigh nothing, you know." And at that time, I think I had like a 35 amp Speco or something, you know. I reached over and I grabbed this thing and it was like a boat anchor. I mean, really heavy. And I reached over and it was an Alinco supply that I got. You know, I reached over.
Yeah, my first switching power supply was Alinco too, actually.
And I picked it up and it was really light. And I thought, something's wrong. This is not a 20-amp supply. I think it was a 20-amp. Isn't that the standard one that they make? Is it 20 or 25?
Ours is 32.
32 amps. Okay, well, then that's what it was, you know. And I said, there's something wrong. There's something really wrong here. And I took it back, and then when I did, I was too embarrassed, really, to say too much of anything after where I got it, after he got done explaining to me that it was a switching power supply and it's not supposed to weigh a ton, and it doesn't have a big, huge piece of iron inside of it, and it runs cooler, and it's actually a lot more efficient, and I really shouldn't be afraid of it, but I was really too embarrassed. Okay, so that was funny. That was just hysterical.
But we love this one because it makes no noise. You can use it on HF, and it's just noise-free.
The funnier story I've got to tell you is the story of my DX70 that I bought. A friend of mine is an engineer in Nashville, and he had purchased one of these things. And he said, you got to get one of these for your car. He said, they're really cool, slick little radio. And he said, if you're going to go mobile, this is cool, 100 watts, it's got 6 meters on it. And I'm like, okay, 160 through 6. And I thought, well, that's really cool. So I got it. So where I was at, there was a local Radio Shack store, and they had run a sale on these things. They had them on sale, plus I think Elenco had a sale going or something. It was like almost like a double whammy at the same time. It was the price just went way down on these things. So I went ahead and I ordered it. Well, it came in. And the guy calls me up and he said, your radio's in. I said, okay. So I went and I picked it up. And the box was so very small. And I, you know, you got to understand something. Now, I had not been around any new technology. At the house, I had a TR-4C and an old Yaesu 101ZD and a few other radios like that. You know, a lot of tubes. And so this Elenco comes in this box, and I'm looking at it, and I said, I told him, I was very sincere. I said, no. I said, because I looked at the pictures and everything, and I don't know what I was thinking. You know, I said, I ordered an HF ham radio. I said, this has got to be something like a Citizens band rig or something like. It's got about the size of a CB radio.
You were thinking the size of a TS-520 or something.
Yeah, right? Something. He says, oh, no. He said, that's what this is. I argued. I said, no, you don't understand. I said, I'm talking about an HF radio. I mean, I'm talking about a radio that puts out 100 watts, you know. And he gave me this real funny look. He said, open it up and look at it, you know, and I did. And so I was standing there with my jaw down, you know, thinking, yeah, this is it. This is what, look at how little this thing is, you know. And so, it's awful when you're that far behind the times, you know, and you don't know any better, you know, and you get exposed to something like that. It's just devastating. It really is. And we've just got, K1 RV set down here, and you are with what? Ham Test Online.
Yeah, right. That's right. Can you hear me all right?
We'll find the mic here just in a minute. Go ahead and get up on it there and say hello or something.
I'm mostly a CW operator, so I'm not used to microphones.
Okay. Well, you may want to get a little closer into that one because we got a lot of background noise here.
Okay.
And I've been raising and lower the volume controls, and I've gone without sleep just enough to where I'm always turning down the wrong one.
Right.
And so Mike's going, whoa, where'd my mic go? Tell me about Ham Test Online.
Well, it's a website. It's a website where we have an online study course for the technician, the general, and the extra class licenses, and we also do the Canadian exam licenses. So it seems to be pretty effective. We've been doing it now for about 6 years. We've had thousands of people that have studied for their licenses through us, and I think this is the sixth year we've been here in Dayton.
Well, I know Dr. Barrett next door here from TW Antennas has told me about you a number of times and said, you know, this, and you need to hook up with these guys here. So, what is different? I mean, you folks have a different method of some sort, I'm sure, with all the...
Well, I think a lot of people, when they talk about studying online, they're basically saying, well, yeah, I took a lot of practice exams online to get my hand... You know, I took enough practice exams until I finally got enough so that I could pass the general class test. Well, we do have practice exams, but that's not the main focus with us. We actually have a course for each one of the licenses, so we want to make sure that people learn the material. As you study with us, you get to a certain point, and we'll finally tell you that, well, we think you're ready to try taking some practice exams. And once you have success with those, then we'll tell you, we'll put your zip code in and find the local VE. does.
Well, you know, I noticed a sign that says something about the, I'm trying to think of how, something about indicating that somehow the website or the test knows the individual.
It's the software that knows you. And what that means is when you come on, obviously we don't know anything about you. And let's just say, for instance, you wanted to get your extra class license. There's 738 questions in that question pool. So when you come in and you get registered and get started off, we figure that you know nothing. We're going to introduce you to all of the material in a logical fashion and take you right through. And we'll introduce the material, give you some informational text on a subject, and then start to quiz you on it with the actual questions. And the first time you see a question, we'll actually show it to you with all of the distractor answers and the correct answer and show you which one is the correct. And then as we start asking you questions, then we'll get an idea of what you do know and what you don't know, and the questions that you answer incorrectly, we start to come back at you with them. And within a short period of time, we've kind of got a fix on you. We know the things that you don't know. We know what you do know. And there's a little bar graph on there, a little colored bar graph, and it starts off completely red. And it has a 0% at it. And what it means is the zero is there's no green there yet. And so once you start and you start to learn the material, it goes from red into blue and then finally into green. And you'll see that percentage start to creep up. And when you get up around 80%, that's when you're at the point where we want you to start doing some practice exams.
So this is kind of like reverse adaptive testing in reverse. It learns what you know.
Yeah, and then if you want to, I mean, where we do have the practice tests, you could also say, well, I want to take a different kind of practice test. I want to take a test with the things that I don't know or questions that I've been having trouble with. Give me a test. And you know how the exams work. They take a question. You have to take one or two questions from each one of the topic groups to come up with the 50 questions for the extra. And so if you ask us, if you choose this from the drop-down menu, okay, give me the one on the things that I'm having trouble with. It can be kind of humbling where you thought you were getting 85%. All of a sudden you're getting a 50 because you really have some problem areas. We will focus on that.
So in other words, what you don't do is the people that are failing the test, you don't announce in a loud voice. You don't say, like, Gary, you've failed.
No, not at all. Not at all. No, but you're keeping track. Even when you're doing this practice, when you do get to the point of a practice exam, that's all going into the database that we have on you. And so we're continually tailoring that and upgrading it. So these courses are tailor-made for one individual person. So if someone were to buy a subscription, it's different from a book in a lot of ways, but if someone bought a book and they said, I passed the test, okay, here, have my book now, it's different because this is tailored to you. So if someone else tried to start studying, we're going to say, well, you already know everything because we're thinking that that other person is you. So there's really, it's a separate subscription for each person for that reason.
That's interesting. That's an interesting concept where the software. But is it software or is it a website?
Well, you have to log into the website, and it's something where you don't need it. There are no books. There are no CDs. You don't have to load anything onto your computer. You just have to connect to us. We have a pretty robust server, and we can handle all many users at a time. And some people will log in from home. Later on, they may log in from work if they can steal a little time, maybe from the boss.
No, don't do that.
Well, lunchtime. You know, you punch out the time clock. You have a 20-minute break for lunch. No, but seriously, people that travel love doing this because, you know, this guy's a guy. I was talking with a guy the other day of truck drivers and things like that. They get into a hotel room. I mean, there's things you can do, but if you really wanted to upgrade your license, this is a great thing to do. You could study from anywhere.
And you're right about the software. You said it starts out assuming you know nothing, which is, you're right.
Well,
you
that's
do
it.
Know, you do know me.
Right.
Well, you know, there is more adaptive software that I've noticed in the educational field that tends to do that takes you down, you know, at a pace, a specific pace, and it knows where you're at. And it doesn't take you into another level until you have conquered the ground you're on, so to speak.
Well, and what we'll do is we'll normally tell people, whichever one of the questions, I'm saying extra, but just for point of example, if you started off with the extra, we would like you to start with all of the question topics turned on. You know, that 738 questions, just so that the topic, a lot of topics are interconnected. And so this way here, you get the full benefit of it working the way that it should. But after a while, you say, you know, I'm really not feeling good about the math. I mean, those things are really tough. You just go into the choose topics page, you turn those topics off. You start working with the other stuff. Or you say, I only want to work on rules and regulations. I can't figure out what the frequencies are for this or that. Just turn that topic on. You could just study that. Study that until you've worked that completely. You've got 100% score in that. You see it all in green. Then turn another one on, turn that one off, whatever you want to do.
Now let me ask you this question. Is this thing intelligent enough to where you start off with nothing? You don't know anything, okay? But what about somebody who has, like, say, for example, somebody who has a general class license? They're going to go ahead and try to study for the extra, but once they get into it, they are not at general level.
Well, some of the topics that you would ask for of an extra do have a basis in either the technician or the general. Those topics are introduced. You would be introduced. You would see the informational text that was associated with them in either the technician or the general, as because it still is, in a sense, part of the extra.
But you understand what I'm saying. In other words, I mean, I think it's possible for somebody to have a general class license and, as they say, you know, kind of like fall off the wagon.
Right.
Okay. Well, now they're deciding to study for the extra, and they couldn't pass the general test at this point unless they went through a lot of refreshing and
well, we do have that option, too. If somebody wants to, and I often say this to people that if, let's say, someone that's been licensed for 25 years, has a general class license, wants to get their extra, and yet they're, you know, they don't feel confident about what knowledge that would be expected of them, we tell them to buy the entire course. You can get a course that covers all three, technician, general, and extra. And then I just say, well, turn them all on, and it'll take you through every one of the technician subjects, every one of the general subjects, all the way right up through. And you'd probably feel a lot more confident with that.
That just something that crossed my mind, because I've heard stories of people who, for some reason, were asked to take the test again, and they couldn't do it. You know, so I'm wondering if it is not a healthy thing to subscribe to a service like Ham Test Online, just so that you kind of stay abreast of the material that's still on the license.
It's really funny you say that, because, you know, our goal is to make sure that you will pass the test. We guarantee that. We offer your money back if you're dissatisfied in any way, or if you don't pass the test. But we have people, many people go all the way up, get their extra, they go through everything. And it's a 2-year subscription, and we have people after 2 years that ask to renew. You can renew your subscription for, you know, a fee. And a lot of people ask to renew because they want to keep refreshed. It's certainly not something that's required, but they want to do that.
That's a good idea. We were talking about that this morning with our new radio. I'm going to program this radio up and get it all set up the way I want it. And a year from now, I'm going to need to change something, and I'm not going to remember how to do it. I'm going to have to go back and drag the manual out.
I usually get the software package for each one of the radios.
That's what I'm doing exactly.
Oh, yeah, exactly, yeah.
But that happens. I mean, and it's weird. You go through the programming process, and you get the thing set up exactly the way you want it set up. And then 3 or 4 months later, you want to do something different, and you're thinking to yourself, how did I do that? How did I do that? You know.
So your software idea would be great for us flyboys to take your pilot's license written test, similar kind of thing, because you have to take a biannual flight review, and your instructor's going to throw something at you you've forgotten from the written test.
Well, we've had a lot of discussion on that. We will be in Oshkosh.
Oh, good.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I'll be watching for that.
Okay, you'll be up there?
Don't know yet, but
okay.
I'll be watching.
Okay, we're going to be in Oshkosh because, and the reason being, I mean, it's another whole subject talking about the pilot tests. We've given that some serious talk. But the other thing is there's a lot of commonality between people that are hams and people that fly, and, you know, I mean, you yourself probably know many people that are hams that are pilots.
Yeah.
Well, the idea of if you're a pilot, one of your primary concerns should be safety and be able to have communications in any time or whatever. So ham radio would be a nice thing to offer to people that are pilots.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, even for technician license, that's probably the level that most people would need. You know, we're not looking to get Maturin high-speed contesters out of all the pilots. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to go up to Oshkosh with
that.
Good
luck with that.
Yeah.
I'll be watching for that.
Good.
That's great.
Typically, how long are you finding that it takes, you know, if a person really works at it, how long does it take them to upgrade? Like, say, for example, to go from the technician to the general, or let's just say from zero to technician, technician to general, general to extra.
There's a lot of variables, but we were trying to pin it down and give a good figure. And we would say, someone wants to become a technician and they have no background, probably 10 hours of study time. If someone would like to become a general, obviously they already have a technician license, probably 20 hours worth of time. And to get an extra, you've already got your general, probably 30 hours of time. So you could add that all up and kind of figure out what that would be if you wanted to go from zero to extra. But we give a two-year subscription, and so we allow up to two years to do it. But some people, we've had many people, well, one of the people on our flyer that we hand out here, you know, zero to extra in 8 days. So they just, you know, they just went crazy, absolutely crazy with it. And then we even have people that are so into it. We have like a top 10 thing that you do in video games, and we show the percentage. You know, you see the users on there, you see their percentage. Well, everybody wants to have, when you play video games, you know, you want to be up in the top 10. So these guys go, people go crazy, and they go, they want to be 100% all the way across the board. Every one of the, we have people that spend hundreds of hours just trying to maintain that, because part of what the software does is if you go away for a little while, you forget things. You go away for a week, let's say. Say you were at 100% and you went away for a week. We kind of figure that your brain, you've lost a little bit of some of that knowledge you have. So your percentage starts to drop. And so we, you know, so people are constantly on there to say, well, I want to stay at the top of the top 10.
Ballpark, what is the cost involved in this?
For, okay, technician, general, extra, 25, 30, 35. You want to get them all? 50.
That's a deal.
And we're knocking, and in this case here, other than the whole group package, we're at the Hamvention, we're knocking off $5 off of each one. So 20, 25, 30. I mean, it's works out pretty darn good.
That's a two-year subscription, you said?
A two-year subscription, yep.
That's just almost but cheap, you know?
So after the 2 years, how much is it to renew it?
If you want to renew it, it would be half of the cost to renew it. Yeah.
We'll be right back with this special rebroadcast of our live broadcast from the Dayton Hamvention 2009 right after this. How many of you would like to operate 80 meters, but you can't because of antenna restrictions? Well, that's over. You can operate 80 meters right now. You can operate from your home, your apartment. You can take it on the road with you. It's the brand new Transworld Antennas 8080. Go to their website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. This is a portable antenna, but it can be a permanent antenna. It's stealth. It's not a low-profile antenna. This thing is a performance-driven piece of engineering. You need to see it. It will be at Dayton, and you need to hear one of these on the air. If you want to operate 80 meters and you can't, I love the 80-meter band. I can't imagine not being able to operate on 80. But nonetheless, if you're in that position, don't stay in that position. Go to the website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. Go up there and take a look at their brand new 8080 and look for it at Dayton.
Week after week, you hear us talk about Transworld Antennas, and you hear us talk about the TW2010, the 4040, the Backpacker, and all these different antennas. Of course, the TW2010 Adventurer came first. Folks were amazed at its performance. Then they introduced the Backpacker, and now the 4040. Go to EHAM and read the reviews on the TW2010. Just go to EHAM and read those reviews. Now, you can do that by going to transworldantennas.com. Just go to transworldantennas.com. Transworld Antennas, one word. Go to transworldantennas.com. There's a link on that page that'll take you right straight to the EHAM reviews, or you can just go to EHAM yourself. And if you're a ham, you know how to get to EHAM on the internet. Just Google it. You'll get there. And read the reviews. see what other amateur radio operators are saying about this antenna. Thank you. As you're listening to QSO, keep in mind, we would really like to hear from you. We'd like to know where you're listening at. We'd like to know, what are you listening on? How's the signal coming in? Are you listening by means of podcast? Are you downloading from iTunes? What kind of station do you have? How many family members do you have? What do you do for a living? We want to know. We want to know all about who you are. And please write us. Now, what you can do is just go to the website, tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And there's a tab that says Contact Ted. Jump in there and send us an email and say hello. Plus, it's really important that we hear from you because it's something that we can show our sponsors. We want to keep QSO on the air, so be sure and write us. Jump on that website, tedrandall.com, and go to Contact Ted and shoot us an email. We'd love to hear from you. And now back to our special rebroadcast of the Dayton 2009 Hamvention.
Mike has to leave us. He just gave me...
It's been great because I've been standing in our booth for 2 days and being able to sit down for the past hour and a half, 2 hours has been awesome. So thanks for the opportunity to come by.
And plus you get to talk to thousands and thousands of people about Alinco products.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'll be tuning in with our new radio to listen to your show because we can pick that up. So
I may be giving you a call because I want to get on the 60-meter band. And I'm going to have to go in there and remove those little doodads inside there. You know, I've already went to, what's it called, something mods, Mods DK, or others.
Radio Mods.
Radio Mods or something. Yeah, it's one of these mod things. They've got pictures in there. And, of course, when the guy puts a little thing at the bottom that says, you know, I'm not responsible if you mess up your radio.
That's right.
So, anyways.
Well, Ted, you've got a great show. Thanks for letting us come over and visit for a while, and thanks for breaking one of the big myths about ham radio, too. You probably don't even know that you've done that. A lot of people think that ham radio is just for ugly guys like that. They haven't been by your booth to meet Holly.
there you go.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it. Good luck to you.
And I thank you for coming by, and we'll have to have you back.
Yeah, and let's be in touch about the radio for the military.
All right. That we will do.
Good deal. Okay. Thanks.
So very long, good. Mike.
So, anyhow, at the price you're talking, it's almost to the point where there's not anybody that couldn't afford to participate and take that test and get the ticket. But it sounds to me like one thing that you're doing there is you're kind of building confidence with a person because it isn't just a study book. It's not just a CD or something. This actually gives a person, I guess I want to say, some confidence. It kind of builds their confidence in that they feel like they have a support system behind them.
Well, we find that there are a lot of people that they think that they might be ready to take an exam from taking some practice tests, and we would rather have them be certain to pass the test. And so that's what we do. We don't, you know, we'll actually give them a little pop-up screen saying, okay, now that you've reached this level, we feel very confident that you will pass the test, so now it's time to take the test, an actual test, and go to a VE site. And there's an awful lot of people that will get 50, you know, they'll get 100% all the way through on their exams, and they come back and tell us. We had a girl yesterday that was 9 that just passed her extra. And then last fall, we had a woman that was 99 that passed her general with us. And she's 100 years old now, and she's still having some fun.
Wow. Now, she went through this course, and she once again, repeat, how old is this lady?
Well, she's 100 now. She was 99. She started when she was a youngster at 97 with us and got her technician. And then when she was 99, she got her her general. And now she just had her 100th birthday in March.
Gosh.
Yeah. Oh, it's really interesting. She's out in Washington State, and she was so excited. She told me, sent me an email. You know, all the people send me emails after they've completed the course. She sent me an email, and she said, yes. She said, well, she lives in an assisted living place in Washington State, and she said, I had some of the boys, and when she says boys, I think they were in their mid-80s, drive her down to the examination site. I think it was in Spokane. And on the way back, after she passed the general test, she treated them to pizza and beer.
Wow, that's incredible. With us?
The podcast that you're listening to contains compromised audio with some distortion. It's not the fault of your player. We had the choice of not putting this file up as a podcast, but we felt in spite of the distortion, the program material was still worth listening to. We do apologize, however, for the distortion. As a listener, we thank you much for listening in spite of the bad audio.
Sitting down here to join us, Dr. Michael Barrett.
Hello, Ted. You caught me with a mouthful of popcorn, and I don't have a lot to say today. You guys done a great show, but we liked Ham Test Online so much that we, without their permission, we put a link on our comments page, our FAQ page, Frequently Asked Questions page, that if you click on it, it goes to Ham Test Online. They have a great product at a very reasonable price. And Marilyn, my wife, who just passed her technician test, actually studied Ham Test Online, but I put the link on there long before she studied to get her license. It is, it works. Now, there's some, and, you know, it's like everything. Somebody's always got something that's cheaper or sounds better or is even free, and you can find some services out there. But these guys have done their homework. They have the repetition. It keeps up with what you're doing, and you can set it and study certain segments. It'll help you with your weak points. It's a great product, and I just wished I'd have come up with it, Ted. That's all.
There you go. Well, how do you get into the situation where you have a person that, say, doesn't know anything at all about theory? Okay, and so now all of a sudden you've got to throw this math on them. You know, they've got to be able to figure out frequency, wavelength. They've got to maybe, you know, impedance or what, all these formulas, which are a little these are abstract to most people. Mm-hmm. So how do you go about without a personal instructor working on a blackboard or something and actually showing the person? How do you get into this math and take them through this?
Well, with a lot of the math concepts with. When I say simple, you know, a lot of us will think that simple algebra is simple, but it's not to some people that have never had a background in it. We give the formulas. Sometimes if people will write and say that they've never had any introduction to algebra or things like that, I also will give them some other hints towards sending them to some places where you can actually, there's some great places online to actually take some very short algebra course, you know, mathematics courses. But we can't make a mathematician out of someone that's not a mathematician. But having said that, if you were totally math challenged, you could pass every one of the exams because the number of questions that are on each one, you know, they may take two questions from one area and one from another and then one from another. But the sum total, even on the extra of really heavy-duty math questions, is probably less than 10. So you could certainly pass the exam.
We've got something going on here. We got a slight change of. Dr. Barrett, now don't run off too far, because one thing I do want to do is I want at some point in time I'd like for you to get Richard over here to talk about the antenna.
Okay, I'll send him when you want him.
Before
okay.
But with us. And there should be a chair, isn't there? A chair around here somewhere. Okay, okay. Is Mrs. Michael Barrett? And you went through the Ham Test Online thing.
I did, Ted.
Tell us about it.
Ted, I thought it was a very comprehensive test. It gave you as much as you wanted to be able to study. You could go in depth with it by doing the study materials, or you could memorize the questions and the answers, and it would go back. What it was so good about it is it brought the testing back to you. In other words, if I was weak in one area, it kept up with that. If I was strong in an area, it kept up with that. And the questions that I missed, it kept showing me over and over again until I got them.
That's interesting. So now, did you think when you first got involved with this thing, did you think you that it was going to be easy, or were you kind of dreading it, or what was your mindset when you got into this thing?
Well, even though, you know, I'd always done well in school, I was really kind of nervous about it because, first of all, working for an antenna company, they kind of expect you to know these things. And so being 52 years old, I thought, oh, criminy, I have been out of school way too long. I'm not sure I can memorize 300 questions. But the test was very comprehensive. It was very good about being able to show you the areas that you needed to know and being able to tell you why the question was right or wrong if you missed it. So I really, really enjoyed Ham Test Online.
Well, yeah, I guess the thing, I was telling him that...
Thank you. We're very glad to have been able to help.
In speaking about it, I said it sounds to me like one of the advantages of it is you feel maybe a little bit more confidence because you feel like you have a support system behind you rather than just grabbing a book and starting to read.
Oh, sure. Plus, it's interactive, you know? I mean, you can sit down and read a book, but I'm promising you that, you know, I'm past 50 and... For me, anyway, I sit down for 5 minutes, I'm asleep, you know. At least with Ham Test Online, you've got something interactive that you can continuously be motivated with.
Now, did you ever get to the point where you had gotten away from it for a week and I started to send you reminders?
I still get the reminders.
Okay, well, you have to tell me that you've passed, and then I try to turn them off.
I understand that, but see, that also motivates you to go to the next level. So
okay.
The reason I haven't turned it off is because I need to study for my general.
Well, that's one of the things that we do is that... you know, if you buy a book, people are very happy to sell you a book, and they do hope you get your ham license, but I have yet to hear of anybody that would call you up from the place that sold you the book and ask you what chapter you're on. Well, we keep
right.
after you. If you don't come back to study, we want you to pass. That's what our goal is. We want you to pass. We want you to learn the material. So if you don't come back for a week, we send you a reminder. Well, hey, where are you? You spent some money here on this. Don't you want to get your license? And it seems to be an effective, it's not a heavy-duty nagging. But it's kind of a fun thing.
It was really a very effective tool for me because I do need the motivation factor and the focusing, so it was helpful.
Well, it's a hurdle because part of the hurdle in studying for the ham license is not necessarily the difficulty of the materials as much as it is the discipline of the study. You know, setting the time aside and actually doing the study. You know, because a lot of people, they get caught up in this time thing. And it's like, well, I'll get to it tomorrow. You know, I don't really have time to do it today, but I'll have time tomorrow. I'll have time next week. And so it just goes on and on and on, and they never do. So I can understand.
That's why we do the 2 years. That's why we give it for 2 years, because, you know, it shouldn't take anywhere near that amount of time, but we want to make sure you have the opportunity to... Life gets in the way. Ham radio is important to a lot of us. But
right.
there are other things out there that are much more important to you personally that you have to take care of.
Right. I'm a mom, and, you know, I'm a full-time businesswoman, and there's just lots of different things that, you know, pull away from your focus. And so just having the reminders were a big, big help.
Now, did you all notice what just happened? Okay.
Yeah.
Once again, I'm going to make the announcement. If you've tuned in and you're listening, you want to know what this is. This is... Dayton Hamvention 2009. We're live from Dayton, Ohio, and we're in the North Hall. We're next to Transworld Antennas and across the aisle from the Voice of America. And I guess it's the Park and Museum, and they have a club there. But that's where we are, and that's what you're listening to. And I ask if they just noticed what happened. Matthew, my son, come down the hallway from this direction. He came up to the table, dropped off a white box, mysterious white box. I have no idea what's inside of it. And then he took off back behind the curtain, obviously, to go look at something else. Now, that's just the way a ham fest is. So I'm sure now he'll probably come back with a brown box of some sort and put that on the floor over here.
But probably a zipper case and
yeah.
everything else, you know. And then you kind of go back to the hotel at the end of the day and you look at all your treasures. And
did you give him your credit card number?
No.
Okay,
no.
All right, okay.
He gave him yours.
Okay. Have you been to the flea market area?
I have. And one of the advantages, I guess, of coming in with a commercial exhibit is you get to have a little extra time on the setup day where before everyone else does to get out to the flea market to browse around. So, yes, and I wish I could get out there now, but it's been so busy. I welcome the opportunity to sit down here with you too, Ted, because I've been on my feet all day.
Well, I've had somebody else tell me that as well. So that's, you know, they say, well, we're doing a lot of a lot of walking. I want to get somebody's attention here real quick. I have Mike over here, who is the public relations chairman, I guess, or the head of public relations for the Dayton Hamvention. And I'll tell you what, Gary, can you step aside just for a second and have Mike sit down here and talk to us a little bit?
We also have a guest here, too.
Okay, very good.
Thanks, Ted.
Middle chair? Okay.
Grab the headphones.
Very good. Very good. Very good.
Thank you. Michael Coulter is with us here, and you are the public relations chairman for the Dayton Hamvention, and all the things that are going on here are things that it's your responsibility to let the world know what's happening, and that's exactly what we're doing right now as we're coming to you live. Tell us about our guests, sir.
Well, Ted, first of all, thanks for letting us sit down. I'd like to, our guest here is Frank Biafor, WS8B, and Frank he runs a fuel cell company. He's also chairman of our awards committee, and he helps out in many ways in amateur radio at Hamvention. So I asked Frank to sit down and with us. He's a very well-spoken individual and very intimately involved with Hamvention. I thought you would enjoy talking to him as well.
The thing of it was I wanted somebody here to give us a rundown on the awards, so he would be the gentleman to do that.
Yes, he's the one.
Okay. Let's hear what's going on at Hamvention as far as the awards are concerned this year.
Well, thank you, Ted. It's a great pleasure meeting you and a delight to be on the air with all the listeners out there. This year, as in every year, we have some really outstanding award winners. We have Richard Garriott, the first son of an astronaut to fly after his father. We have Danny Hampton, who is a fellow that put in an infrastructure in the southeast part of the country that tied a number of hams together through 2-meter VHF and UHF. And our third is a fellow that is known by a lot of hams over the last 50 years. His name is Copthorne McDonald. Copthorne was the inventor of slow scan television.
I had a nice chat with him yesterday. I recognized him immediately. He's a great, great guy.
Yes, he is. You can see his neatly combed white hair bobbing up and down. The interesting thing about these three individuals, and they were nominated independently, and we had a large pool to pull from. In the end, we found that there was a common thread, and the common thread was slow scan television and space communication with children. As I mentioned, Copthorne invented slow scan television, and Richard Garriott used slow scan television to broadcast the video from the International Space Station, and Danny Hampton transmitted that throughout a good part of the United States. So little known to each other, they worked together via ham radio.
And I guess what in talking earlier on the telephone here with Mike, he was telling me about these people, and I was just in awe of the stories. He related to me the story of the fellow that maintains the repeaters, and his name again is
Danny Hampton, Wade Danny Hampton. Is that correct? Yes, Hampton.
Of him going up on a repeater or on a tower in inclement weather to repair an antenna, and I that just got me. I thought about that for a long time, and I was just thinking, you know, that to me the thought of climbing a tower,
yes,
would make me dizzy. Of course, I don't know, some of you guys here may be tower climbers. You may have that in your blood. I don't know. Some people do, you know. Working in the commercial radio business for a long time, I learned that tower climbers, these guys are a breed of their own, man. I mean, they're the same guys that like to scuba dive and jump out of airplanes and do all kinds of things. But
well, the amazing thing about Danny, and we didn't find this out till after the nomination and reading through the papers, is that he has been visually impaired from birth. And so when we were talking to him, I said, Dan, you know, how do you do this? He said, well, the one thing about it is, you know, I can look down and not be afraid.
There you go. That's a That's really incredible. Well, how does the awards thing come about? You guys, obviously, this year, you've come up with some incredible people. You know, I mean, and if nothing else attracts an individual into amateur radio, this caliber of person and that and level of accomplishment definitely is something that would definitely draw people in. Now, we aired the audio of Richard Garriott in space talking to all these kids at all these different locations and all these schools and everything. And that was absolutely amazing. It really was, because you hear these kids asking questions, and this man's coming back to them over ham radio from the space station. I mean, just absolutely incredible. How do you go about getting the names of the folks, and how are they nominated, and then what kind of toil goes into trying to make the decisions? I mean, that would be a tough one, I think.
It's a process. If you look at a number of the amateur radio magazines, you'll see reminders of nomination for these awards. And if you open up our program today, you'll see that we immediately want to take nominations for next year's awards. On or about December, we'll send reminders out to all the major magazines and whatever networks we have to place these nominations in through ARRL or through directly to us. We collect them, and then on or about early April, we sort through these names, and we have some clear criterion for picking the individuals. And I have to tell you, it's a very tough job, because we end up with a spectrum of individuals. And, in fact, there were years where we reached back in the previous years and pulled people into that. They're just some phenomenal people in amateur radio. In fact, some of the people that nominated these individuals, I think, could be award winners themselves. Would you say that, Mike?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. Frank Bauer, he works for the Goddard Space Center, and he was the one that nominated Richard Garriott. And, when you look at what that man's done for amateur radio and coordinating the amateur radio effort and the International Space Station, you know, just that alone has been pretty amazing.
We had Frank Bauer help us when we did our Marconi event. He was the one that coordinated it on the 100th anniversary of Marconi doing his first transatlantic communication. We had it set up through Frank to have Marconi's daughter talk to the International Space Station from our setup out on Cape Cod, Massachusetts. And it was absolutely, Frank said afterwards, it was one of the best ones that he had ever been orchestrating.
And in the case of Danny Hampton, he had a plethora of people that were listed as his underwriters for the project, and it was just an entire big team that was so delighted with what he did. Of course, Copthorne McDonald actually popped in with strong recommendation from a winner last year, Wade, help me out with the name last year.
Ward, that would be Ward Silver.
Yeah, Ward Silver. And I think you all, Ward Silver is authored a number of articles and books, but he is pretty popular for a article that he has in QST every month. It's a technical article, and in fact, you can take. I've seen the book. All these technical articles have been put together to become a book in itself. So, a strong recommendation came from a winner last year for Copthorne McDonald as well.
You know, I guess Dayton. The Dayton Hamvention is we're billing it. It's the largest amateur radio event on Earth. it absolutely is. Of course, this is where the cream of the crop come, and this is where you can just about find out anything you want to find out about ham radio, regardless. The awards are a tremendous thing, and I think it's so important to recognize these folks and to let the public aware or bring awareness to their special qualities, their achievements, and their attributes, things that they have done, because that then encourages other folks to reach and to achieve and to go, you know, one step further than they've already gone. And those will be the folks that will be the winners next year and the year after, of course. You know,
Ted, it's interesting. None of these winners aspire to this Academy Award of Amateur Radio. There's nobody out there pushing themselves to do this, and you know they're nominated by other people. And the best part of being the lead person on this project is when it's done, I get to call them. Now, this go-around, Mike, you got to call Copthorne. But I have to tell you, no matter what walk of life these winners come from, when you call them and you announce this, they just turn into a 10-year-old. It's just absolutely unbelievable.
I can only imagine. Mike, tell me a little bit about what's gone on this year. What have you seen here? You're responsible for the promotion of it, for everyone understanding what Dayton's all about. So I guess my question is what's been the most outstanding things you've seen here this year? Things that have really impressed you and stood out?
Well, there's a lot of interesting things that have happened and have really stood out. Good question. Actually, what stood out in my mind is a couple of things. The general positive feeling from most of the hams and most of the visitors, practically all the visitors that I've met. I think it's generally been pretty positive. We have a really great crowd this year, more so than we've had in years. We've sold more inside exhibits, more outside exhibits. And, you know, another thing that happened, which was truly amazing, is the fact that it's only rained at night. Our flea market opened at 8 a.m. this morning, and about 5 minutes to 8, it quit raining. We've had a little bit of drizzle now and then, and it looks like by the time we close the day, it may start raining again. So, you know, I don't know how that happened. We worked hard at that.
Large antenna array we had set up back there pointing westward with the amount of RF we were putting out, I think had a lot to do with pushing the clouds.
Yeah, I forgot about that, Frank. That was part of the plan.
Yeah, I noticed this morning because, you know, I got up and went outside, and, of course, it was drizzling, and I looked at the sky, but half of the sky was, or three-fourths of the sky was covered with clouds, but over in the corner, it was clear, and you could see the sun coming through, you know. So it did not feel like one of those days where it was going to rain all day long. Boy, those are miserable, especially for Hampeth. But I was out in the flea market area, and the weather was really nice. I mean, I really enjoyed walking around, and it seemed like everybody was in a good mood. Now, they had their tarps handy. You could see they were ready to run for cover in case the clouds should come forth, you know. But it didn't happen, and everybody seemed to be really enjoying themselves. What have you found anything unusual in the flea market area, Mike?
Well, actually, no, because most of my time is spent talking to a lot of different people. I talk to vendors. I have other duties besides being the official public spokesperson for Hamvention, and I haven't found anything really unusual. I know Frank. Have you? He spies things out sometimes better than I do.
I'll point out two things, and I actually didn't run into them this year, although I know they're out there. We have one unusual outside exhibitor that comes every year, and I don't know the name of the booth, but he has actual Enigma machines from World War II. These were the code machines that the Germans used to send secret messages. And the one thing, I watched them, you know, the first year I was here, I looked at him, and he had a price tag of about $5,000 on him. I think that eked up to around $45,000 now. And the other thing is the amount of old military surplus. I guess the old Vietnam stuff is finally being dumped, you know, and there's a trader out back, and this guy was selling 4-foot sections of fiberglass mast, special antenna mast, for $10 a bag of 12, and the bag was worth it alone.
Was that the 8-foot sections or the 4-foot sections?
They were the 4-foot sections, okay. 12 4-foot sections. So you can imagine stacking those things
up. How could you beat that, really?
All right.
Yeah, right.
You know, another interesting thing that's big this year, we've had 45 forums, 45 of them, you know, where we have speakers and demonstrations of all different types of activities within amateur radio. And almost every one that I saw was standing room only. I know Frank here, he had one on using fuel cells with amateur radio, and I went in, took a few pictures. It was standing room only, and we're talking hundreds of people in these forums. It was truly amazing. So that's been another big thing this year. People are here not only to buy, to see friends, but to learn as well in these top level forums that we have.
Well, I went back to the Bob Heil forum. He was doing the audio seminar. Of course, I've been to three or four of Bob's seminars, and I went back to see if he was going to do anything different that we needed to record to put on the radio. And he said, well, this is going to be about the same thing that we did in Las Vegas. I said, okay. But the room was packed. I mean, there were people standing in the back and around. And I don't think I've ever seen that quite like that before. Is that is that a little unusual, or is that? I mean,
well, we usually have forums, two or three that may just absolutely pack them, standing room only. But this year it was really different. Forum after forum was standing room only, and that's pretty exciting because that tells us there's a lot of interest in, a lot more interest in learning amateur radio. And I want to mention something else. We've been pushing harder this year to in the public relations and our marketing, is to push amateur radio as far as what it can do technically and the technological advances that amateur radio has helped. Instead of, you know, just the guys with the towers on their caps out there walking around in the flea market. I mean, they're all fun, too. But we don't want the general public to lose sight of how important amateur radio is and what it can do in emergencies, in technical advancement, just so many different things. So we strive hard to find good media spokesmen to help myself, help Frank, and help other people with Hamvention to be able to spread the word about the technological advancements we're making.
Well, you know, when Alan Pitts was here just a little while ago, we were talking, and he's the public relations director for the ARRL, and we were just talking about all the different things the public is just not aware of that came from amateur radio. And, of course, one of the most common things is our cell phones. You know,
right,
the fact that
right.
a cell phone is a radio, and most people don't know that the cell phone is a radio. They think it's a telephone, you know, or they think it's something. And so that is one thing that I think the Dayton Hamvention does, and that is there is so many facets of ham radio. Anyone that comes here that's a prospective ham and walks through the building, they're going to be awestruck by all the different things that are here that you don't even think about. I mean, when you go home and you're thinking about amateur radio, you pick up your latest copy of QST or CQ or whatever, and you thumb through it. There's things here that never make those magazines.
You know, well, Bob Heil and I had an opportunity to do an interview on Wednesday with Dayton Daily News, and I have to really applaud the reporter. He picked up the salient points that we both tried to make. But I did to follow that avenue, picking up where Mike was, and, you know, sure, we like to have fun with goat cam and that type of thing, but and then I went on. Things like single sideband was adopted in the Air Force during the Cold War, and it was a main means of communication from aircraft to aircraft and to ground on long distances. And in fact, a lot of the Air Force equipment still carries sideband and operates sideband. And as you pointed out, cell phones, the repeater systems that we have, we were up and running with those long before 800 trunking systems for police departments were put in place. It's just a hotbed of electronic development, and it goes on today. I mean, I was watching D-Star demonstrations today, and although it's in its infant stages, but I think that's going to bring a whole new look to communications as well that will probably flow over to the commercial sector.
We'll be right back with this special rebroadcast of our live broadcast from the Dayton Hamvention 2009, right after this. If you already own a TW20 10 Adventurer or Backpacker antenna, and you want to use the antenna on 40 meters, you can get the Trans World Adventurer 4040 array box in center section only, right now only $139.95. That puts you on 40 meters, and you're dealing with the exact same antenna structure that has made the TW2010 Trans World Adventurer so famous. The black powder coating, the stealth, the way the antenna is able to hide. And in addition to that, it's portable if you want to take it with you. Of course, you can get it with a deluxe travel bag. It's just fantastic. Go to the website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. That's transworldantennas.com. If you can't remember Trans World Antennas, just remember to go to our website at QSO, tedrandall.com, TEDRANDALL.com, and click on the link for Trans World Antennas. Take a look at this brand new Adventurer 4040. Have you been looking for a place to put a website? Have you thought about putting your own website up, or possibly you've got your own right now and you're not real happy? The name to think about and remember is Tux-Support.com. Tux like Tuxedo, the little penguin, the mascot for Lennox, the Lennox operating system. Tux-Support.com.
Just remember that name. If you're looking for a website for your amateur radio club, your church, your organization, your business, or even a personal site, you need a place to put that site, and you want a simple way to put it together and maintain it. One word or one company to remember, that's tux-support.com. Tux-support.com. That's tux-support.com. Tux-support.com. The only name you need to know when it comes to your website. As you're listening to QSO, keep in mind, we would really like to hear from you. We'd like to know where you're listening at. We'd like to know, what are you listening on? How's the signal coming in? Are you listening by means of podcast? Are you downloading from iTunes? What kind of station do you have? How many family members do you have? What do you do for a living? We want to know. We want to know all about who you are. And please write us. Now, what you can do is just go to the website, tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And there's a tab that says Contact Ted. Jump in there and send us an email and say hello. Plus, it's really important that we hear from you because it's something that we can show our sponsors. We want to keep QSO on the air, so be sure and write us. Jump on that website, tedrandall.com, and go to Contact Ted and shoot us an email. We'd love to hear from you. And now back to our special rebroadcast of the Dayton 2009 Hamvention.
It's amazing, and it is... It is mind-boggling, especially when I talk to folks. One good friend of mine, Ronnie Millsap, and Ronnie talks about how the technology has changed and how amateur radio has kept him in a position where he was able to stay abreast and ahead of the game as opposed to falling behind and trying to figure out what's going on, you know. One thing I want to mention, not to interrupt what we're doing, but if you're listening right now on 7415, we will be going away on 7415, but we will be on the air and staying on 9330. So if you're tuned to 7415 and all of a sudden we disappear, retune the radio to 9330. And, of course, 9330 reaches out into the west. We're going west now. This has got a fantastic signal into California and Arizona. We hear from all of our West Coast friends. But it also does a very good job into Detroit and even here in Ohio. It's a good frequency. But I want to make that announcement in case that you are listening and we go away. Be sure and flip the band switch and get back with us on 9330. What would you say to folks, Mike, about, you know, this year maybe they didn't get to Dayton? What about next year? I mean, we want to encourage them.
Great. You know, if you've never been to Hamvention or you haven't been in a while, it's actually on the move and growing. I think it gets better every year. We've had a few down years in attendance, but this year has been really big. I mean, I'm sure you guys see it. It has been absolutely fantastic. You know, we hear the rumors that, well, you know, this is the last year of Hamvention. You know, that's not going to happen. I mean, we've been doing this since 1952. And why would we stop now? I mean, this is an important pillar for amateur radio, we think, that the Dayton Hamvention is, along with so many other people who try hard to encourage folks in amateur radio to allow them to learn. And, you know, for our youth today, learning technology. I mean, up there in the ARRL area, and by the way, we're having the ARRL National Convention here, we've got children up there who are just real into this right now and very excited. We've talked to, there was a young man today who was teaching me about D-Star. I have an extra class amateur radio license. I don't know anything about D-Star. You know, I've been into HF and things. And so it's very interesting to learn from these younger people and learn some of the new modes. But I'd say to the people next year, you know, take a look at our website, www.hamvention.org. Great website. Start making plans now, and as we will be right after this Hamvention, we start looking at, well, what can we do better? What can we do to improve? And part of my job is walking around asking people, what do you think? You know, and I have a recognizable face here, Ted, and so does Frank, and we're stopped all the time. People either tell us good news or just tell us, hey, maybe if you did this, and we take all that into consideration.
Well, you know, I'd like to say this. We are in probably the worst sunspot cycle that we've ever been in. It's just been terrible. We're in the middle of an economic recession, you know, that has been that's hit everybody, okay? And then look around here and look at this crowd. I mean, there are people, I mean, and I was at Dayton last year. I can't tell any difference. To me, it looks like there's more people here this year than there was last. But I can't tell that because that's just, you know, that's a fooler, so to speak. But I walked out of the main arena, and the one thing I go by is the difficulty to pass through the aisles whenever you're in an area. Now, of course, there are times it thins out in a portion and gets thicker in others. But overall, it's been a little bit more difficult for me to get down an aisle and get up to something that I want to see, I think, than it was last year. I think I had a little bit easier access last year than I did this year. That's the only thing that I've noticed. But where once again, the bottom of the sunspot cycle, we're in the middle of an economic recession. Everybody knows that. The economy is not good. And yet the crowd here is tremendous. And the people that are here are, they're smiling. They're walking around. They're really into it. They're totally absorbed in what's going on. I mean, you can walk up and you can see these people. They're riveted to what they're looking at. And the crowd is extremely responsive. And I guess that's what I've got to go by. So the only thing I can say is next year, it's got to get bigger. It's got to get bigger. It's got to get better. There's no, you know, and I think for the most part this year, I've noticed stuff here this year that I didn't see last year. And I think the future looks very, very bright for Hamvention. And thank heavens we have something like this because, you know, this is the granddaddy. But let me ask you, how does it feel for you guys to know that you're the guiding team, so to speak, or part of the guiding team of the largest amateur radio event on the planet? How do you feel about that?
Well, you know, when you're in the mud of it all doing it, you just don't give that thought until the day that you arrive here and it's all coming together. It's just like Mike said, immediately when we're done, we are going to be doing a post-mortem, if you will, on what we can improve. And then we start on our next year's event right after that. And so you're slugging along all through the year. And do we pick up our heads to even realize this?
Well, the other thing that we talk about that we have the good fortune of being biggest show in the world for amateur radio. And we want to continue that. We want to provide a great venue for amateur radio operators, for the technology in amateur radio. So we want to see the cutting edge here. We welcome people coming here. We consider it's an honor and a responsibility that we have to maintain this. You think, where would you be without ARRL? Where would we be without Hamvention or some of the other big events? And the people like yourself, Ted, that support amateur radio. Where would we be without that? It'd be lost.
That's true, and I think we give a critical mass to the avocation. And, you know, it all comes together here. You mentioned earlier about synergistic technologies, and you know, we're seeing total evolution. I know that when internet first came out, we were definitely afraid that would make it a bit, and it did make an impact, both negatively initially, and now I think positively, because there's some other things coming out of there. People are really truly getting involved in what's going on there, and our hobby, our avocation has come together. But I want to come back to Hamvention. The other thing about this is that this is done totally by volunteers. There isn't one professional aligned with this program at all. And, you know, this is a lot for 300 volunteers to do. But we do it for the hobby, and you're right. It is a focal point for the entire avocation.
Well, doing something this large on this grand a scale, you know, you're obviously working whatever profession that you're in, and you've got to get your 8 hours a day in or whatever, and then you've got to handle all of the other things, like Ted calling on the phone and saying, hey, what do I do about this? And I'm sure you probably have, 300 or 400 people all calling on the phone asking the same questions. I guess I would ask this question for folks across the country that are running smaller venues, you know, smaller ham fests that are promoting the hobby in different cities. What kind of advice would you give them? How do you handle all these things, or how do you make it come together without each other going you know, without eventually going ballistic and having a nervous breakdown? How do you get through it?
That's a great question, and that's something that we talk about. We have a fair amount of professional managers that are involved, professional people that lead companies, lead organizations. And so what we try to do is to let people know the issues that may come up and that the importance of working together as a team and how we can resolve things instead of the he said, she said thing. And in any volunteer organization, you can get an element of that. And, you know, we're not without that sometimes. We work hard. There are people who get a little bit upset sometimes, but we talk it out, get over it. But we all try to look at the bigger picture. And we have over 300 volunteers. Over 300 volunteers. Now, that is an interesting, I mean, that nobody gets paid, so they could quit at any time, and they could, we have to find somebody else to do it, and we have to work through that. So it's a matter of leadership, good coordination, good planning, so people know up front what they're doing.
I need to add, too, when we said we have 300 volunteers, and we do pick up a few after when the show starts, these volunteers aren't only Dayton volunteers. We have picked up volunteers from all the states and the nation, and we've had some foreign country volunteers help us as well. So we're very, very delighted about that. And again, it's open to the world if they want to volunteer to help our operation.
I don't want to take up too much of your time because I know you guys have got things to do around here. You got probably, I just noticed you looking at your cell phone like you probably had five phone calls since you've been sitting here, and I understand that. But let me just say this. Maybe Frank could just one time go over the list of winners who won this year and what they won for, and that way if you have to go, then you can. And you're welcome to stay if you wish. We can sit here and talk for until we go off the air. I enjoy it immensely.
Okay, thank you, Ted. Thank you very much, Danny Wade Hampton from South Carolina, who spent a significant amount of his personal time putting in a superb network. He is the Amateur of the Year. We have Cop Thorne McDonald, who is our technical winner, who invented slow scan television. And we have Richard Garriott, our general winner, who was the second generation person to fly into space and contributed a tremendous amount to International Space Station contacts with students around the world.
All righty. Well, I thank you guys for joining us. Is there anything else you'd like to add to this, Mike?
Ted, we want to thank you for having a live broadcast here from Hamvention. I know there's people out there who would probably love to be here that sort of like getting the feel of what's really going on here. You know, how's it doing? And you know, I just want to add that it is doing really well, and I hope that people who are hearing this can make some plans and come next year. It is truly an event. You know, it takes a day to go through or longer to go through the flea market. It takes at least a day to get through all the buildings inside of here. Truly exciting event in the forums. Great, great event. Thank you very much for allowing us to say a few words. And on behalf of the Dayton Amateur Radio Association and Hamvention, thank you, Ted.
Thank you, Ted, and it's a pleasure to meet you.
Very, very, very welcome, and we really enjoyed being here. And another thing, too, of course, if you go up to the website, either tonight or tomorrow, and all this here, this broadcast, along with all the broadcasting we've done up here, will be up on the internet in the form of a podcast, and also on iTunes. So there'll be a lot of people discovering the broadcast through iTunes as well. I had a lot of folks coming by here, passing by, saying, "Hey, we're downloading the podcast and we're listening on our way." A guy told me, he says, "He said on my way driving in, I listened to two of your podcasts on the way down." Of course, they're 2 hours in length, so that means he had a four-hour drive. So wherever he came from, it took him 4 hours to get here. Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Chad.
The podcast that you're listening to contains compromised audio with some distortion. It's not the fault of your player. We had the choice of not putting this file up as a podcast, but we felt in spite of the distortion, the program material was still worth listening to. We do apologize, however, for the distortion. As a listener, we thank you much for listening in spite of the bad audio.
Also joining us is Richard, who is the chief engineer for Trans World Antennas.
Hey, Ted.
How has your Dayton Hamvention been so far?
It's been great. It really has been. The interest level has been really high. We've had a lot of our current customers come by and share their experiences, and we've had a lot of new people come by. We've had current customers talking to new people in front of the booth. I mean, it's just really been an experience. And there's there's so much here to see.
You know, we talk a lot about this antenna, and you're into the design part of it,
right?
You're kind of like the brains behind this monster, you know.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, but yeah.
But why don't you take just a minute to explain to folks, especially hams that have a little bit of theory in regards to antennas, why is it that this thing works so well? And we're talking about the TW2010 and the other antennas that operate with the same body and frame that is portable and stealth and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, the antenna, the secret behind it is you know, everybody asks what's the efficiency of it. You know, the power efficiency is not a secret to it. The real secret is the takeoff angle. It's omnidirectional. But the signal takes off at a really low angle, 26, 27 degrees. So you get really, really long skips. Efficiency-wise, you know, it's comparable to any vertical dipole, but it has the added capacitance hats on the top and bottom that shape the pattern. Instead of a couple of donuts of radiation coming off, you got a couple of dinner plates of radiation going off, so you get a focused signal going off at a shallow angle, and so you get these really long skips with low power.
Did you toil much over the design of this thing? I mean, was this something that was a long time in the making, or did you just kind of wake up one day with an idea? How did that?
No. It didn't work like that. It's been we spent a good 2 years on it, and it's been an evolution. The road from your boss saying here's what we want to do to having something at a booth is a long, painful journey. But we went through all the stuff that everybody goes through when they do something like this. You know, that this doesn't work, and you're pulling your hair out and things like that.
A fair amount of trial and error.
Lots of trial and error. Lots of experimentation. Lots of. Well, that works. Great. Why? Don't look a gift horse in the mouth. It works. You know.
Well, I can't. Now, here's what's strange. I don't have much time to operate. I really don't. I mean, I'm going all the time. So I've had this antenna sitting in the backyard, and I would turn the antenna on, or I turn the radio on to the antenna, and I'd get on a frequency, like, for example, up on the 17-meter band. We'd start tuning around. Hear somebody talking, and I would think to myself, I got this double extended ZEP in the backyard, which is fed by open wire line into a Johnson kilowatt matchbox, ancient, you know, link couple tuner, and something in my brain says, oh, wait a minute, you can barely hear that guy, you ought to switch over to the ZEP, because that ZEP's big and it's going to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'd switch over to the ZEP, and then the signal level drops and the noise comes up. And I'm like, now wait a minute here, this is like voodoo. I mean, how can this little antenna sitting on the ground do this? And yet it does.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is this is a product of it looking like a couple of plates instead of a couple of donuts is what it, yeah.
the pattern. Yeah. I mean, don't expect to see a couple of dinner plates out in your yard. No. Yeah, and by the time a signal gets to you, it's usually going pretty flat. I mean, if it reaches you from a far away, it's coming at you pretty well straight on. And, you know, if you have an antenna that's looking for a straight-on signal, it's going to receive it well.
How does that pattern, does the pattern change much in regards to frequency? I mean, is the takeoff angle any lower on one band than it is on another band?
It does not seem to be. I mean, the modeling says it doesn't matter.
I've kind of wondered about that because I know that in different types of antennas behave totally differently on different frequencies.
Right, right.
Gain will change, just all kinds of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Especially
it's such a simple design. I mean, it's a vertical dipole, you know. And so the question could become, if you have a vertical dipole or any kind of dipole, and you look at the pattern, if you change frequencies, does that basic dipole pattern change? You know, it doesn't. It's just a donut of, you know, radiation. The shape stays the same. You know, the size gets bigger if you put more power in it, but it's the same shape. And, you know, it is a vertical dipole, so the principle holds that it's such a simple antenna that it's kind of a fundamental pattern for it. You know, it's not like a Yagi where you've got a very delicately tuned pattern. You know, you take a file and shave a little bit off of one element, and then you got a completely different lobe over here. It's not that kind of thing. It's very simple. So we haven't seen any different patterns from different frequencies.
Well, it was weird because we had David putting the antenna together and taking it down, and we did the video. And it was really shocking to see that he could actually put the structure, assemble the structure, in a minute and 20 seconds. I mean, from out of the carry bag and assemble it in a minute and 20 seconds. Now, that doesn't count for hooking up cables and things like that, but just the fact that you can put a structure together that fast is really kind of amazing.
Now, don't tell him I said this, but I kind of thought he was going a little slow on it. maybe I was trying a little hard, but I timed myself a long time ago at 30 seconds to put it up. But you know that's if you've owned one for a while, maybe.
Well, yeah, but the other thing is we were taking a video of it, so we wanted people to be able to actually detect what his movements were. You know? David, my son David is sitting here. He's got his son with him. But now Richard says that the video that you cut with the putting the antenna up, he said he thought you were moving a little slow.
Well, you know, I probably could have gotten a little faster.
I asked Ted not to tell you that, but if as soon as he owns it for a little longer, he'll get it down to 45 seconds or so.
45 seconds. You think I get it that fast?
I did it at 30.
All right.
So yeah.
Okay. I could probably get it 40 seconds.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. I believe it.
Start tweaking a little bit here and, you know, working on my setup time.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what's weird is I was home one afternoon, and I started going up and down the band, and within the space of an hour, I had talked to the Canary Islands, some guy in Italy, some fellow in France. I don't know. It was like, I don't know, three or four I would consider to be pretty healthy DX contacts. I've been sitting here too long. I really am. Need a cup of coffee. So anyhow, wow. What was that anyway?
I don't know.
Anyways, and the I think it was a guy in the Canary Islands kept asking me to repeat myself a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
And I did the thing. I went back over to the Zep and then back to the 2010, and I was still scratching my head saying, I don't believe this, you know. This is so. Anyhow, after it was all said and done, I was thinking, well, you know, the thing worked pretty good, except the guy was, maybe I need an amplifier, a little amplifier to help me out, because the guy kept asking me to repeat myself. It was about that time I looked over at the Elenco, and I realized I had it in low power. So I'd done all this on, like, 5 watts.
Yeah.
I was like, I can't believe I did this on 5 watts. I've never been an advocate of QRP. Now, I'm a fan of those that love it, but you know, to me, I think that, you know, static is static, and I just don't like dealing with it, you know, and I don't want anyone on the other end to deal with it as well.
Sure.
But that was weird. I mean, that was really strange.
Well, I experienced the same thing with somebody who was looking at potentially selling these for us, and he wanted to try one out first. So, sure, loaned him one, said, just see what you think about it. So he calls me the next day, and he says, Richard, you wouldn't believe it. I talked to Rush on 5 watts. Great. But, you know, I've heard several reports of, you know, 5-watt contacts. And several reports of, I was kind of scratchy, it was kind of quiet, and then I found out I had it on the wrong band. You know, that kind of thing.
Well, I guess that would be easy to do. The thing, though, that got me was the absence of noise as compared to a dipole.
Yeah.
What is that all about? How does that happen? I mean, what causes... I mean, noise is noise. You know? So how is it that this antenna produces a lower noise level and floor?
It's magic. We have a guy that shakes something over it and blesses it before we package it. It could be a number of things. I mean, there's always, you know, location. There's orientation. There's, you know, you got a low takeoff angle, so the signal is a little more focused in a little smaller vertically of a smaller angle. So, you know, whatever noise crashes or things like that that are in your environment, only the ones that maybe that are focused down at your antenna at that angle will make it in. So, you know, there's noise is one of those elusive kind of weird statistical things. It's not as easy to point your laser pointer at and say, there's the problem. It's kind of elusive, but it does really well with noise.
We'll be right back with this special rebroadcast of our live broadcast from the Dayton Hamvention 2009 right after this.
If you like to travel, if you're a camper, if you'd like to take your ham radio hobby with you when you go, you need the Trans World Antennas TW2010L Backpacker Antenna. It's the same exact antenna as the TW2010 Adventurer, with the exception it's been streamlined for the person who likes to camp and travel light. It's the same rugged antenna structure as the TW2010, with the black powder coating and stealth design. We all know the TW2010 is a great permanent or portable antenna, but the TW2010L Backpacker takes portable and emergency operation to an entirely new level. It's especially suited for the amateur operator who loves backpacking, cycling, camping. It makes easy access and quick setup possible for the most extenuating emergencies. TW2010L Backpacker Antenna is available now for a limited time for only $399.95. That's right, $399.95. Pricing includes backpacker, quadra stand, carrying bag, and free shipping in the continental United States through FedEx Ground. That's transworldantennas.com. And now for a limited time, only $399.95. That's transworldantennas.com.
How many of you would like to operate 80 meters, but you can't because of antenna restrictions? Well, that's over. You can operate 80 meters right now. You can operate from your home, your apartment. You can take it on the road with you. It's the brand new Trans World Antennas 8080. Go to their website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. This is a portable antenna, but it can be a permanent antenna. It's stealth. It's not a low-profile antenna. This thing is a performance-driven piece of engineering. You need to see it. It will be at Dayton, and you need to hear one of these on the air. If you want to operate 80 meters and you can't, I love the 80-meter band. I can't imagine not being able to operate on 80. But nonetheless, if you're in that position, don't stay in that position. Go to the website and check it out, transworldantennas.com. Go up there and take a look at their brand new 8080 and look for it at Dayton.
As you're listening to QSO, keep in mind, we would really like to hear from you. We'd like to know where you're listening at. We'd like to know, what are you listening on? How's the signal coming in? Are you listening by means of podcast? Are you downloading from iTunes? What kind of station do you have? How many family members do you have? What do you do for a living? We want to know. We want to know all about who you are. And please write us. Now, what you can do is just go to the website, tedrandall.com. That's TEDRANDALL.com. And there's a tab that says Contact Ted. Jump in there and send us an email and say hello. Plus, it's really important that we hear from you
because it's something that we can show our sponsors. We want to keep QSO on the air, so be sure and write us. Jump on that website, tedrandall.com, and go to Contact Ted and shoot us an email. We'd love to hear from you. And now back to our special rebroadcast of the Dayton 2009 Hamvention.
That was the thing that I guess I want to say really struck me was the fact that when I would flip from the big Zep over to the 2010, if I had it on the correct band, using the same receiver, immediately noise would drop, signal would come up.
Yeah.
And I didn't like that.
Yeah.
Because I had believed in my antenna. You
know? Well, and we don't like destroying people's investments or faith in their products, but you know, yeah, we just give you what we've got, and then hope you're happy with it.
Well, I've been happy with it. I've been really surprised. Things amaze me. I mean, I just like, and of course, David is on one all the time. I hear him calling CQ through my studio speakers, you know, SERFs of the house, you know. So it tells me he's running slightly more than 5 watts.
Just a little bit, just shy of it. You know, I've got my own 5 watt story, and that's with that 817. You know, I was on there yelling CQ, probably been about 45 minutes, you know, enough to make my boy here, who's currently sleeping in my arms at the moment, he's all tuckered out, but to where he was, you know, mad at me yelling CQ. And finally somebody came back to me, and it turned out that it was a gentleman that was flying a 737 at 35,000 feet up in the air down at the bottom end of Africa. So I had an excellent QSO with that gentleman. That was really wild.
Awesome. You never know who you're going to be. We're joined by Scott. N7SS, is that correct?
That's correct. Good afternoon.
And your last name again is?
Honaker.
Honaker. I've talked to you before. We've had previous conversations. But this gentleman is with ICOM.
Yes.
And tell me what's new at the as you join us here. Tell us what's new at the Hamvention with ICOM right now.
Well, we have one new radio. Well, that's the big new radio this year is the ICOM 7600, which is the HF replacement for the 756 family. The 756 family has been discontinued, and they're currently doing some kind of crazy pricing on closing that out, and but the new radio is out and shipping and available, and has a big bright new display. It has a bunch of roofing filters in it already installed, all done, and USB support, which is kind of fun. So you actually have kind of the ability to put a keyboard in and do PSK and RIDI directly from the keyboard. You don't have to actually, no computer required, keyboard and radio, and you're done. And the nice big display gives you pretty good usability of being able to, you know, see all of the QSO in progress. And you still get a little waterfall display in the corner and a little quadrature display, so you tune things right in. And what else do we have? Well, the USB is kind of fun because it lets you, you can do rig interfacing through it. You have the ability to get audio through it, so you don't need any sound card interface. It comes straight into the PC, so if you do any kind of digital mode stuff, you actually have a lot of cool interfacing options. If you use a laptop, you don't have to worry about lousy sound cards in laptops. You actually get really nice quality audio all digitized in the radio and comes straight and stays in the digital domain the whole way through.
So this is a rig that you could plug the into the USB and into the computer. You could probably control the rig as well as pass audio into it and run it over TCP/IP at a different location somewhere.
Absolutely, yeah. There's no net card interface in the radio itself, but obviously with programs like Ham Radio Deluxe, which should have no difficulty supporting it because they already do support the USB audio in the 7200, which is a little older model, and the little portable rig. And he supports the 756 family, and it has the same feature set, same command set. And you should be able to easily interface that up and share it out and hook up the audio and get really good quality audio.
But now, you know, I've heard of folks using the Ham Radio Deluxe program, even going back to the 746, they use that on that radio as well. I don't know what they can do with it.
Absolutely. Yeah, he can do pretty much most of the feature set, or at least the primary features of the radio, tuning the radio, changing modes, switching filters, some of those things he has the ability to do all via software commands. And you can share out the audio over, he has a couple different mechanisms that he recommends. I can't remember, Skype is being one of them, and I don't remember the other at the moment. One of my things has always been to do exactly that, set up my station and have it all remote controllable. One of the guys in our club does that. He can actually access his home station from his PDA and do rig control all from his PDA, and that's a pretty fun application.
That is wild. Well, now you say they're discontinuing the 756 series.
Yes.
So right now you can probably get a deal on one somewhere.
I've been hearing some crazy prices. I haven't had a chance really to walk around and actually get pricing, but I know ICOM's been offering some incentives, and the dealers have been offering their own, and so there's been some kind of crazy deals even on that radio, which is still an outstanding radio.
Of course, ICOM has been in the game for a long time now, and they're a well-respected name, and they really put out some good stuff, not only just HF, but VHF, UHF as well. What's going on in the VHF, UHF arena?
Well, as far as VHF, UHF goes, the big deal there from ICOM's perspective, of course, is D-Star. There are two new D-Star radios. There's the P80, or sorry, the ID80. I keep saying P80. I don't know why. The ID80, which is a handheld unit, and has D-Star and a GPS mic option available for it. And the mobile, there's a replacement now for the ID800, which is a single VFO dual band mobile, is now out, and that's the ID880. They both have some nice one touch. Response type things that allow you to use the D-Star features much more easily than in the past, where you had to dig through menus.
Now, for folks that don't know and they've never fooled around with D-Star, they've heard about it, inform our listeners a little bit. What can you do with it? What makes D-Star so special? What stands it apart from just general standard communication on VHF or UHF?
Well, the primary purpose of D-Star was to provide narrow-band digital communications, digital voice communications over amateur bands. And there are basically two modes. That's called the DV mode, the digital voice mode. In the digital voice mode, your bandwidth is, well, the published bandwidth is 6.25 kHz, so it's substantially smaller than a standard FM signal. So it's very, very spectrally efficient. It has pretty good voice quality. By having the digitized voice, it has a little bit of a mechanical sound to it. But the other interesting feature is that since it's digital, it tends to stay very, very high quality until it kind of goes away, as one might expect with, you know, satellite signals and things like that. It sounds very, very good. Then it does what people refer to as R2-D2, which is kind of breaking up. And that's the kind of indication that if you were to move just a little bit, you could probably get it in still, and then it's just gone. So you don't get the constant, you know, constant increasing amount of hiss and distortion that you get with an FM signal. And then you also have the ability to carry along in this DV, this digital voice signal, there's a small data package that you can carry along at the same time. So call sign information can be carried there, GPS data can be carried there, and actual raw data. There's another guy here, Dan Smith, KK7DS, who's written this very cool program called DRATS, that does data communications over this slow speed DV mode package.
Now, I saw somewhere where a fellow was using D-Star at a hamfest somewhere and providing broadband access to everybody in the place.
Yeah, there's a second mode called DD mode, which is the digital data mode. It's a high speed data mode. And it's 128K baud data, which doesn't necessarily sound very fast, but ultimately it's about twice the speed of dial up. And, of course, it's only done at 1.2 gigs where there's spectrum to do this, because obviously it's a much larger signal. But you have a 10-watt radio at 1.2 gigs, which gives you a pretty significant range, far more than you get with a Wi-Fi access point, for example. And you end up with pretty reasonable. It works just like an access point. It's a single channel. But with 10 watts instead of whatever fractions of a watt an access point gives you, and at 1.2 gigs, which has better propagation.
Well, yeah, I guess, if you're being able to pass data, and let's say you're not necessarily doing Internet stuff. Let's say you're not providing Internet access to somebody. What other types of data? I mean, you can display call signs. But apart from that, what would be the other types of standard data that an amateur might want to have on board that you're going to send to somebody else for what reason?
Well, the low-speed and high-speed data obviously give you different capabilities, but a lot of people are setting up repeater systems for MCOM use, for example, and they're using the DD mode. They'll set up an actual server of some sort at their repeater site, and they can put a web server up there, and they can have web services. They can have an email server, an FTP server. They can transfer files, they can transfer emails, they can locally host all those emails. So they don't actually even rely on Internet access to provide all of these data services. And they can provide a backup for their local served agencies that's difficult to do under other circumstances. With packet radio, for example, even at 9600 baud, once you start sharing that channel, it starts to lose efficiency very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And one of the things that well, in fact, me personally, I'm a RACI's radio officer for our county, and ham radio is about the fourth level of backup for voice communications, but as more and more of those guys are relying on their BlackBerries as a primary means of communications, if that data network goes away, they are, I don't know that they even recognize how lost they are. And that's one thing where D-Star can provide reasonable data capabilities in a relatively seamless way. It's just Ethernet networking, so it's in that in the DD mode. So that's a very simple way to interface to standard services that are available from, you know, Microsoft Windows servers or Linux boxes or whatever you want to run.
I'm going to ask you to do something just a little bit different. Give me a little history of ICOM. For folks that are listening, that, you know, I mean, everyone accepts the fact that, I mean, I guess I can go back in time. I can remember when there was no ICOM. I don't exactly remember when they entered the scene. I think my first experience with ICOM was a 2-meter radio, and I'm trying to think what it was. It was something, a 22 something, that had a programmable type situation where you pre-programmed the frequencies in, and you had a channel selector. But it had an incredible receiver on it. And it seems like that seems to be the reputation. When I talk to folks, they always talk about they like the way the ICOM receivers sound. You know, so I was going to say, give me a little background on ICOM's entry into amateur radio and anything that you can think about that makes the company special or stand out.
Well, I'm certainly no ICOM historian. They've been around a lot longer than I've been.
I may
been
have asked you the wrong
even.
Question. You know?
That company's been around for a long time in Japan, obviously. They've been around since at least the 60s in Japan, and I'm not exactly sure when they came to the United States. The ICOM 701 was historically the kind of the first entry that people saw digital radio in the United States from ICOM. One of the things that Mr. Inoue is the founder and owner of the company, and that's where the I comes from, ICOM Inoue. And he's very proud of the fact that all of the radios are made in his own factories in Japan. They don't outsource any of that stuff. They maintain very, very tight quality controls on all the radios. And as a result, they're very proud of the innovations that they put in the radios and the quality that they build into the rigs. The first real ICOM radio to be perfectly honest, one of the reasons that I got interested in ham radio at all was the ICOM 781, that monstrous, they called it a legacy radio. That was just to show off their technology. I can't even remember how much that thing weighed, but it had the 5-inch, you know, amber CRT on it with the spectrum to scope, and that was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. And that was one of the driving forces for me to actually become a ham. And that thing came out when I was in college. And shortly after that, I actually got my ham license. So I still don't own one of those radios, but it's in the I keep kind of keeping an eye out for one. Even now, I still want one of those radios.
Yeah, you probably check the flea market to make sure.
I actually do actively look for that radio. Just so I don't know exactly how I would justify it because it is a monster, but that display still catches my attention.
I think we all have these boat anchors and older pieces of equipment that we look for, you know. And of course, then there's the toil when you find one. Usually, it's priced more than what you would expect. So then you're toiling over, do I really want this or don't I want this, you know?
That's exactly the situation, yeah, exactly. It's like, well, you know, why would I spend this money when I could buy a new radio? But that is the one. Yeah, I think I hear people all day long come to me and they say, well, I still have a, you know, they talk about the arsenal of radios that they have. And invariably, they still have, if they don't have the very first radio they ever owned, they have the same model of that same radio. They just sold the old other one a long time ago, and then they had to repurchase it just so they felt comfortable. They still had that legacy, that handle on that radio.
Well, with them discontinuing the 756, the new rig that is taking its place is what now?
The 7600 is the new replacement. Same form factor, same size, a little larger screen.
And what differences do you see now, or have you had a chance to really play with one to see what either improvements or new features that you would think would be significant in the eyes of the average ham?
Well, the first thing that struck me when I powered it up was that the screen was significantly larger and brighter. In fact, I thought the radio was larger, but in fact, it's exactly the same size. The screen just pops right out at you because it has this LED backlight, and the fluorescent display in the Pro 3 was always a little dim. And of course, it would kind of warm up over time, but now it just, boom, pops right on, and it's a little startling, actually. And then the three roofing filters are the biggest improvement in the performance of the radio and the USB support. But there are a million little features that are really hard to enumerate. And a lot of this comes from progressive feedback. Every time we go to a show, I actually got a couple comments today that I need to make sure that they get passed along, that improvements for some of the radios. And it's just the way, like, the knobs work, or the markings on the knob, or the color scheme over here, or if this knob was moved over just a little bit, or a lot of these changes are very, very small, but ultimately make a huge difference in the usability of the radio when it actually comes contest time or DX time, when you're under pressure or you're tired or whatever, and that just makes the radio a little easier to use.
Yeah, and sometimes I think that the fascination of a radio can be something as simple as a big bright display with a lot of color in it or something like that, you know. It's like years ago, it was the color of the backlighting on the S meters and things, the different colors they used. It kind of attracted you, you know. You looked at that radio and it carried a certain amount of mystique to it, you know. So,
exactly. One of the things that, I have to say that on some of the larger radios, one of the things they did between the 756 family and this new 7600 is they moved the S meter. They had an analog S meter on the 756 family, and to save a little screen space or front panel space to make it available for other functions, they moved it onto the display. And of course, now you can change its size and shape and type and all this other stuff. But the ballistics on the needle, they actually have this analog-like needle that still has a swing and a little flutter. And I have to say, on the larger guys, the 7700 and 7800 ear radios, I've stared at those displays for so long, just imagining how long it took the developer to come up with the ballistics on the needle, to come up with that perfect little flutter, and just to make it look exactly like an analog meter.
That's I was going to say, the being able to make it look like an analog meter and to do the ballistics and stuff, that's quite enough. I mean, that's a study in itself, apart from the function of the meter, you know. So that's really something. Well, you know, I guess, and of course, this is a good time now for folks to kind of look into the a deal on a 756, because that's going away, you know. Ballpark, what do you suppose someone might be able to save on one? Just approaching what, based on what you've heard. Now, I'm not asking, nailing you down to a figure. I'm just saying, just ballpark.
Well, there were several hundred dollars off even the last prices that I saw before the show. So the last thing I heard was less than $2,300. I heard some prices that I actually can't even quite believe, so I'm not sure. I'm not going to even remotely make any comment, but I'm not sure if they were, I don't know, if they were dreaming or if somebody actually did quote them those prices. But At one point, somebody actually said under $2,000, and I'm thinking, maybe I misheard that or something, but that can't really be right.
Well, man, I want to thank you so much for coming by here. I also have a fellow that came along, and it's Steve. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And the call sign is?
Whiskey Golf Zero Alpha Tango WG0AT. I used to be N0TU, and people have asked, why would you give up a call such as that for a peanut butter call of WG0AT? And it all has to do with I'm the alpha goat.
Okay, now maybe you want to explain what the alpha goat is, because I don't understand it here. The best of Rooster and Peanut. I see something here that's on YouTube. Tell me about this. What is this?
Well, it's a long story, Ted. I got started in hiking with goats a long time ago. I've been a ham radio operator for 50-some years and have enjoyed the outdoors ever since growing up on a surfboard in Southern California. And anyway, make a long story short, I retired a few years ago, and before I retired, I picked up a couple of goats. My wife was into horses, and they have become my best hiking buddies. They carry all my gear when we go backpacking. And one of my fascinations at work was video production. And when I retired, I got into producing my own videos, which the internet, as you know, has made a lot of things available to a lot of us that normally weren't available before. And being able to produce a video and put it up on YouTube and get a response from it, particularly from the ham community, has been quite fun. Hence, I've produced about 50 videos in the last year and a half. And I'm basically sharing my hobby of ham radio and taking it to the wilderness. And it's each 10-minute or 6-minute video sort of tells a short story about camping in the woods with goats, and the goats, without cue or instruction, typically do something really silly or funny, like trip over the antenna or chew my coax or something silly. And I now have developed characters of these two guys, and typically I add captions when they look at each other, and it's a long story. You'd have to go on YouTube and look up Goat Hiker.
Well, I'm definitely going to do that. So okay. I'll have to go up and look at Goat Hiker. And now, are these videos you handed me here, this is the best of, are these are the same then?
There's 4 hours of video there. There's four DVDs, they're all available on YouTube, to pull down and look at. I've had requests from fans all over the world asking me to put the videos on DVD so that folks that don't have internet access could look at them, as well as clubs that would like to roll in the video before a club meeting or something, just to stimulate. The group.
I see. You got to hit somebody who's taking your picture here.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm noticing some vintage equipment here. I see Hallicrafters and Hammerlin receivers on this thing, and I'm just going to have to get up on YouTube and take a look at this. And it's Goat Hiker.
Goat Hiker, yes.
And your call sign again is
WG0AT.
WG0AT.
Or W-Goat, or Whiskey Goat. Right. And
That's amazing. I know I'm going to have to see this video, because it sounds like it's really good. It sounds like we're going to really enjoy this.
Indeed. It's all about having fun. the outdoors, and when I put the videos together, it's usually a short story on the adventure that Rooster and Peanut and I had on a hike in the mountains, and we make contact with other radio stations, and I incorporate images of their stations so that you can see who we're talking to, and some of the DX and that sort of thing. It's a hoot.
Well, we're going to check it out, and I thank you so much for coming by and talking
to
us.
Sure.
Here you go, sir.
All right. Thanks, Ted.
Thank you very much. Now, also, I have with me, and this is Caitlin, if I got that right, Caitlin Cole, and the call sign is
KS3P.
KS3P. And it says here, I don't know what this says here, but it looks to me like you have an extra class license. So did you take the test today by any chance, or how long have you had the extra?
I've had my extra for 5 months, and I'm having a blast with ham radio.
You're having a blast. And I want to ask, how old are you?
9.
You're 9 years old. You've passed the extra class, and you're having a blast with ham radio. Where are you from?
Harvest, Alabama, which is about 15 miles northwest of Huntsville.
My goodness, that's fantastic. And this gentleman here is
my dad.
That's dad, okay?
Hi there, sir. My name's Stan Cole, NX3P, proud father of KS3P.
So tell me, what got you interested in ham radio?
I saw my dad on ham radio, and I decided, hey, that looks fun. I want to do that, too.
So then you obviously didn't start off with an extra class license. how did you start off? What was the first license you had?
I got a technician manual from Gigaparts. Well, technically, my dad got it from him, for a little surprise. And then I sort of looked through it, threw it on my shelf, and then it sort of got all dusty. And then around, summer break?
August.
August. Sorry about that.
Bob Kimbrell, W7KU.
Bob Kimbrell, W7KU, came down and said, hey, do you have a technician manual or a studying manual? And I went, yeah, I have a technician manual. And then he said, well, why don't you go get it, and then we can study a little bit. So I went into my room and got it, and then we studied for about an hour. And then I went in the next day to the Huntsville Ham Fest, and I took the test sort of like a dry run, and then I got about 13 of the questions right, and then
2 weeks later
I came in to take my technician test again, and I got it.
You did? Okay. Now, what did you think when you got the technician license? What was the first thing you wanted to do?
I was just really excited, and I just wanted to call all my friends and tell them, and I really wanted to scream for some reason.
So then, did you go from technician to general, or did you go to technician to extra? I mean, I somehow got a feeling that she's got a knack for this hobby.
Well, about a month later, she, in October, the day after her birthday when she turned 9, she took her general class down in Athens, Alabama, and she passed her general ticket. And we kept studying every night and mixing it with a lot of operating, make it fun for her. And next thing we know, in January, she got a pass, and she's been on a roll since.
So did you obviously you got on the HF bands and started talking a little bit on HF to amateurs, and tell me a little bit about that.
When I had my general, I was just sort of doing a little bit of talking on HF, because my call sign was Kilo Juliet 4 Golf Papa Golf, and then I was trying to talk to DX or whatever, and then I was there going Kilo Juliet 4 Golf Papa Golf, And then they were already going back to someone, so I decided to get my extra so I could get a shorter call sign.
I've heard a lot of reasons to get the extra, but that's a good one. You wanted a shorter call sign, so when you get in the pileup, they're going to pick your call sign because it's going to be easy for them to say.
Yes, and I've, like, worked Trinidad, Brazil, K5D Deseo Island, and I've done other DX, and I've just been having lots of fun with ham radio because I've been making other new friends, and just in general having lots of fun.
Well, it sounds like it. It sounds like you just really, really enjoy the hobby. This is really a neat thing. What do your friends think about you being in ham radio?
Well, some of them think that it's sort of boring, but I say, hey, it's cool. Don't say that about my hobby. If you don't think that it's not good, then don't say anything about it. But some of them say, wow, that's really cool. I want to get my license, but I'm so busy with homework. But I say, that's okay, maybe you can get it when you get older or something, as long as you get your license.
Well, yeah, I don't you think maybe that some of it is that they're just not willing to work as hard at it, maybe? They just don't want to take the time to spend studying, and they'd rather be doing something else that they think is more fun at the moment instead of kind of investing their time a bit into studying.
Time flies when you're having fun, doesn't it? Well, we'll continue our rebroadcast of the Dayton Hamvention 2009 next week. And hopefully we'll be able to have rebroadcast the entire event as it happened live. Stay tuned next week, same time, same station, for another QSO. Thank you for listening.